Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
And today we have with us a very special guest who is now, unbeknownst to her, our official VR pundit. Saku Panditharatne is with us. Say hello.
Hey there.
And
I get to the podcast.
It is great to have you.
Absolutely.
You're sort of you're a legend in our mind because we know you from another podcast, but we'll get into that a little bit. And if you are listening today and you have some feedback about today's show, we'd love to hear it. So please leave it for us in the discuss comment box on our site at futurecommerce.fm. You can also subscribe. And if you somehow found this without subscribing, I'd love to hear about how you did that. But on iTunes, you can hit us up on Google Play, or you can listen right from your Amazon Echo on TuneIn Radio with the phrase Alexa, play Future Commerce Podcast. And I remembered to mute my Echo today. So there we go. Nice. All right. Well, welcome. Saku, for those who aren't initiated, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Okay. So right now I'm working in VR, making content creation tools and also consulting for businesses on what they should do to prepare themselves for VR. Before that, I worked at Oculus. I was like a summer intern there during their crazy growth phase where they went from maybe 100 to 200 people. So I kind of got to see VR take off right at the beginning. So this is the summer where they got acquired by Facebook. They released DK2. They released a mobile VR headset. Crazy times. And then after that, I worked at Andreessen Horowitz, a venture capital firm focusing on emerging technologies, which was a lot to do with VR. So I've kind of seen like this broad overview of everything that's happening in the space. It can kind of be, I find it sometimes kind of opaque to outsiders, because unlike in general tech industry where, you know, anything happens and it's immediately reported on, in VR a lot of stuff is, a lot of the innovation comes from like the content world, so it's kind of hard to keep track of what's happening, so you don't see it in TechCrunch every day. So that was my last job, and now I realized that the big problem in VR was making stuff to put in the virtual world. So right now I'm working on making tools to help people do that.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I think we're very excited to have your experience. That's quite a lineup of places that you've been already. So you kind of mentioned you're consulting around VR right now. Do you want to elaborate on what it is that you're focused on right now in a little more detail, or can you?
I've just had various different. Actually, like one of them was this. Probably shouldn't go into too much detail, but it was this that's probably too much already.
No, that's pretty cool. So it's not you're obviously, you know, pretty ingratiated in the world of VR. And it actually, I think what I take away there is that it's not a terribly large space yet, and most people probably know, you know, it's you probably know the other players in the space.
Good takeaway.
Yeah.
Good
so takeaway. Who is I know about Oculus because I sometimes watch TV, I'm on Twitter sometimes, I know that Samsung has some sort of a virtual, I'm tipping my hand that I know nothing about this, and I'm sure that people that listen to our podcast know nothing about it. And I want you to go deep. I don't want you to explainify anything, but my takeaway, or from what I understand, is that a lot of these technologies are sort of white labeled. They're like sort of the same thing kind of sold over and over, and there aren't really, there's a lot of things sold under different brands, but are probably the same sort of technology. Can you kind of help maybe level set that for me so I understand?
Yeah, it's definitely true that if you're building a VR headset company, your genius is going to be in the software rather than the hardware. It is a lot of commodity hardware. Now, I think the main reason VR took off a couple of years ago is because the smartphone supply chain drove down the costs of key components. So that's your GPUs, your OLED displays, your sensors, your accelerometers. Mm. Like all of that stuff comes from the same smartphone supply chain that gave us the iPhone and Android. I think like VR headsets, they do all use the same components, but there is right now a big difference between your cutting edge headset and your less cutting edge headset, because like the few milliseconds it takes you know, to update the screen. Those kinds of things make a big difference in terms of user experience. So even though the components are broadly similar, like the fine details do matter at this point because it is still an emerging technology.
Got it.
That answer your question?
Yeah. In spades.
Yeah, and kind of go along with that. You know, maybe you could just give us, and again, Philip said, don't explain it, but you know, maybe you could give us just a quick summary of the current state of VR in terms of what you like, where you think it's at in its life cycle, and what it can accomplish right now. What types of experience it can provide?
Sure. So the way I see it, there are two major milestones for VR. One of them is presence. So this is like a psychological boundary. It's like a discrete threshold that you cross, and it's something clicks in your brain, and instead of feeling like you're looking at a screen, you feel like you're actually in the world. So for example, if you stand up, stand on a cliff in VR where you have presence, you get scared that you're going to fall over. And so this is like a technological threshold. And the other major threshold, I think, is something like mainstream adoption. So is VR going to get out of the hands of, you know, consumers and early adopters? Is it going to be as popular as a game console? Or I would consider that mainstream, or going even further, is it going to be as popular as like computers or phones or something like that? So I think in like this year, the current generation of VR headsets have crossed the first threshold. So they've achieved presence. So it means the technology is there with like the very high-end headsets. So that's your Oculus or HTC Vive. You've got presence. With mobile VR, we're still not quite there yet. So I would say that's like 1 to 2 years away of, you know, presence on a mobile headset. It may even be next year. I've heard rumors suggesting that. And then the thing about mainstream adoption. So then that's a case of just getting this VR with presence, getting the price down to the point where people can actually buy it. So I would say that's also 1 to 2 years away as well.
Yeah, actually, Google just released, you know, the Daydream device, and I was wondering if we talked about that a couple episodes ago. Have you had a chance to check it out yet? How do you feel about that?
So I checked out an earlier version of Daydream. I think it's cool how it's definitely got the price down with that. But I think with VR, it actually, like, if I was going to buy a headset right now, I'd go for like one of the desktop high quality ones like HTC Vive or the Oculus CV1, because I think it does matter at this point if you have presence. You know, because if you have low quality VR, you know, you get sick, you don't feel like you're actually in the world. I don't know, you can only use it for short bursts of time. And I think there is like this discrete jump between, you know, mobile headsets and headsets which have presence.
So, you know, this show, you know, where the future commerce, and so definitely what we really want to dive into today is, you know, applying VR and maybe we'll talk about AR as well to commerce. But it is a bit theoretical since we only have, you know, a few examples so far, like the, you know, cars. We've got BMW VR experience, we've got Lowe's HoloRoom. You know, Shopify is certainly excited about it. They've written some pretty cool articles, I think informative articles about VR. Actually, I was at IRCE last year in Chicago, and their booth was 100% focused on VR, which is pretty interesting. Shopify is already jumping on that train. But anyway, so what's your initial view on commerce through VR?
So I think the interesting thing about VR is it seems particularly suited to very high-end experiences. Because VR is like, experiencing VR is like great for entertainment. You know, you can have like these phenomenal user experiences within it, but the content is very expensive to produce. So that's why most of the stuff I've seen in doing VR and commerce has been for the very high end. And so this is like real estate agents selling $50 million apartments, and doing this like perfect reconstruction of the place so that you can see it, without having to actually visit the home. And then also stuff with cars. So I've seen, you mentioned BMW. The stuff they're doing is like, you know, you get in and you can take a test drive in their concept car, or, you know, you can drive your BMW 3 on the moon, like this kind of stuff. And this is for, the main purpose of this is to build building relationships with customers for like mostly high end or luxury goods. And so I think the only stuff I've seen which hasn't been for the very high end has been stuff using 360 photography. So Foxton's, the real estate agent in the UK, has been taking, you know, full 360 pictures of flats, and then people have been able to see them without actually having to visit them. And so, like, that's one use case I've seen of not high-end, but yeah.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, it seems like it, you know, shooting 360 video might be a lot easier than producing a full-on VR experience, no doubt.
Yeah. I've actually seen a bunch of startups that have sprung up just to do like reconstructions of like, you know, like apartments or houses. They will do things like, because to do the reconstruction, it's like, you not only do you have to capture the geometry of the place perfectly, you have to get things like lighting right, you have to do like, you know, what's the texture of the leather sofa look like. It's just like a painstaking effort. It's like making a movie.
Well, it's one of the things that I sort of crossed my mind was re-architecting real world experiences in virtual worlds. It just sounds like, I don't know. It sounds like a lot of this, the same sort of just transplant of a paradigm. I'm kind of interested in the thought of, you know, you create a virtual store in a virtual world. Part of the charter of this show was talking about how we had a paradigm shift. I almost vomit to say those words, but we really did. We had a very big change in the way that we that mobile devices have changed the way that we interact in commerce, and it sort of happened very suddenly. Whereas it took 30 plus years for personal computing to sort of eschew the old real world metaphors of folders and files and desktops. Right. And so I think, if we're kind of following that Moore's law of adoption of getting rid of the real world metaphor that's holding us back, can you sort of posit what that might be to see what a platform or cross-selling or brand experiences would be different to just standing in a virtual showroom? Or is that kind of the whole point of VR?
Yeah, no, I think the thing about VR is that, I mean, I do agree that a virtual store is kind of a boring thing to see. So the way I think about VR is it's invented for entertainment. It's going to flourish best in the entertainment industry. And if you want to make the most of it as a seller, you probably have to do something which is close to entertainment, at least right now. So I think, so what BMW is doing is like, you know, having you to have these like fantasy car experiences. That is kind of what I see VR being used for, is you know it's not just a way to shop. Like, mobile is great because I see VR and mobile as like complementary. So mobile is for like a utility. So it's for, you know, you can go buy something on Amazon, you press a button and you get the thing that you know you already want. So it's like, you know, you like order your milk or maybe not that quite yet, but you know, it's like more right. for routine things. So it's like you buy something commodity, like, you know, your books, your electronics, that kind of stuff. I think VR is like the complete opposite of that. It's for these unique things where you're not sure whether this brand appeals to you. You know, it's, I guess, you know, forging an emotional relationship with the BMW brand over a different car brand. It's about like seeing, one thing I saw you, I think you mentioned fashion earlier, but a bunch of these fashion companies were like live streaming their runway shows to in VR. And so that's another example of where you have this direct personal experience of a brand, and they get to build that relationship with you via VR. And that seems to me to be the main application.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're saying it's not really going to be like this store. It's not like we're going to go shop in some marketplace.
Right? So the way I do see that kind of store thing happening is via online games. So one big thing that Facebook is trying to do is make VR into this very social platform. So that's why they acquired Oculus. And you've seen all these posts about how they're hiring people from the game industry to build like virtual Facebook. And so, like, I can definitely see there being this kind of Second Life type environment in a few years where you will go and, like, buy virtual goods. You'll, like, have this kind of digital economy. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the video game EVE Online.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's this game which has, like, such a complex economy that they publish quarterly reports, and you can, like, go read and be like, oh, I guess the EVE Online economy is going through a boom time this quarter or whatever. And I can just see, like, there being VR video games which have that level of complexity in them.
Mm. Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Brian.
Go ahead, Philip.
I think I have a little bit of lag here, so apologies if I break in. My part of me feels that there is an element of presence that we already have with a lot of digital devices in our life. You know, we're spending more and more time in front of screens. One probably could argue that people feel pretty immersed in those realities now. How much deeper do you think we can go? Could it ever really cross that sort of that threshold of sort of replacing? You know, not you sort of took this very you know, utopian sort of view of this great, you know, Second Life society, but could there be a dystopian sort of a take on that too?
Oh yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that, you know, people are going to spend all their time in video games, not in real life. I don't know. I don't think it's like that much more harmful than TV. Mm. I mean, there is one theory that all of our technology has to be more addictive than the previous one in order to replace it. But I mean, I guess if you want to say something like, is Snapchat more harmful than watching MTV? I'm not sure. I think it's just the same thing we've always had.
Mm. Back to selling through experiences. Do you think that actually brands will have to create higher quality stories and content? I think BMW is actually a really great example of this with their BMW films with Clive Owen. They've done some really, really great stories through that. Do you think that other brands are going to follow their lead and start building out more story-based experiences and allow purchasing during that story?
Oh, totally. I think that's probably like the best application of VR that there is. So one cool thing, so I've seen like a lot of TV studios have like film studios, they'll have like a major blockbuster film coming out, and they'll also have a VR experience which is targeted towards early adopters, so just kind of fire them up so they get out there and promote the film. Mm-hmm. So I remember, I'm not sure if it was The Hobbit, but it might have been. They had like this great VR experience where you'd have like, you'd see, you know, you'd be in this cavern, you'd see this dragon come out over like this pile of gold or something. It was just really cool. It was like, you know, top tier VFX. It only lasted about 5 minutes. And after you saw it, you're like, whoa, I'm really excited for that. I'm going to go post on Twitter. This is the best thing ever. Mm. And, mm-hmm. you know, and the thing is, like, VR right now is pretty expensive. So the amount of people you can reach with it is quite low, but you know, if you can get this, but it is very effective for those people that it does reach.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that. Yeah, I think there were a few other movies that did that recently. The I think Man on Wire movie or mm-hmm. whatever it was, that was another one that did it, did a VR experience that was pretty cool, I've heard. Yeah, so what about like a more general, do you think that, like, because this medium is sort of up and coming and that a lot of budgets are going to go into building out VR experiences, what do you think will happen to sort of the traditional retailer in this scenario? How are they going to leverage VR, or are they not going to be able to leverage VR because their method of selling is sort of going by the wayside because people are going to spend all of their time an easy experience as opposed to going to like the mall?
Well, I don't know. I can see a lot of these like very niche retailers benefiting from it. So I think there's a big difference between like your Unilevers and your Amazons, who, you know, they don't really have that much of a differentiated story to talk to. And so I can't see VR being very useful for that. But if you're like something like a mainstream brand you see in the mall, but also has their own distinctive story, like if you're like Abercrombie & Fitch, for example, I don't know, maybe you can make a comeback doing, you know, VR movies where you tell a story, people get really excited, and I guess it's just a way of developing brands. I mean, the ones who can build premium experiences, I think, will benefit a lot from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we had Scott Immons from the Neiman Marcus Innovation Lab on the show recently, and he had a pretty good story to tell around adopting those sort of one of a kind experiences that engage with customers in a new way, that sort of re-engage a different demographic or a different people from in a new way that sort of reinvigorates their affinity to the brand.
Can I just make like a prediction? So one thing that really I find interesting from a marketing standpoint is I see a lot of marketers doing more segmentation these days. So they'll say like, oh, you know, our customer base is actually like these people, their age group, their personality traits, where they live, etc. And then I can definitely see making VR experiences tailored directly to this one group to reach them in like the exact right messaging. So one precursor to this, I think, is like Netflix making movies based on data. So they have like demographic information, cluster it, and then they'll make a TV show that they know will appeal to that demographic. And I can totally see that being the case with like high-end VR advertising.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good prediction. So one of the other things that's kind of, I've been thinking about lately, and I'm gonna go a little bit off topic for a second, then come back. But recently, like, I've got children, and recently with games, like when I was growing up, games were a pretty specific experience. There was a very limited set of experiences in a game that you could go after. So like you'd have a Nintendo and you'd have like Mario, and it was sort of fed to you, my friends and I all sort of had the same experience, all doing that one thing. And what I've noticed with my kids and like my nephew is that now when they go and go experience games, they have an insane amount of options for how to experience their games, different platforms and methods. And they can mod their games. You look at Minecraft, and my nephew's really into Minecraft. And so, he's got his different mods, and it's like everything at this point is all about what you focus on and what you put your time into. And all that to say, I feel like now brands and retailers and so on have an insane amount of technology that they can employ right now, like chat, AR, VR, location-based tech. It's like a kid trying to figure out which video games that they want to focus on and put their time into.
It's deep, Brian. It's really deep.
I know. Right. So many merchants won't have the ability to put their focus and dollars into all of these different technology avenues. And many of them will hardly have enough budget to even put together one premium experience. So what tech do you think they'll best be able to, and most cost effectively be able to deploy?
Oh, well, that's interesting. That's true. You know what, one of my theories is that whenever a type of technology gets taken over by 3D graphics, we start calling it a game. So a lot of these location-based games or mobile games or AR games are not really games. They're just like apps which have 3D graphics attached to them. So, so I guess to answer your question, it obviously depends a lot on who the merchant is. I can definitely see AR and VR being reserved for like the most, personalized, customized, niche high-end industries. I don't know. I think there's also that general, Andreessen Horowitz's software is eating the world theory, which means that, pretty much technology is just really important and it's just eating into every industry. And so it might be that the answer is just you have to go for all of them. Like, tech is just central to a lot of businesses these days, and you can't really skimp out on it. But I mean, obviously it depends on who you are.
Yeah. So you're saying that maybe, you know, if you don't have the budget to invest in different technologies, that really you shouldn't be in business.
Well, not saying that explicitly, but
I mean, technically, you said that, Brian. She didn't say that.
I did say that.
My feeling, Brian, is that we have a I don't know why I keep saying your name, Brian. We haven't had, you know, those homogenous video game or entertainment experiences in a long, long time. Could argue that, you know, from the VHS forward, we've had different experiences on an entertainment and entertainment basis, you know. So there's a whole generation of people that, you know, I grew up with my parents playing an Atari 2600. So my experience was Space Invaders, and it wasn't like, you remember that one really cool time when that thing happened or what? It was just kind of like the experience of being there, you know, doing, playing the game. Right. And then it kind of evolves, right? Like, there was that one jump in, you know, the eighth world of Mario that, like, you had to learn to hold the B button so you could jump. Like, there was that experience that everybody sort of had in that moment. But now, like you said, the experience is more customized and personalized, and you're fundamentally going to have a different experience to me. And I think that that's cool. Like, I think that's actually the selling point of this, is that I can make it what I want it to be. The thing that worries me a little bit is merchants or retailers being sort of coaxed into web VR as being that panacea of, oh, we're going to make your virtual catalogs, you know, we're going to make your catalogs in virtual reality.
3D.
And, you know, like, yeah. Who wants, nobody wants that. Who wants that?
Right. Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, no, that's what I'm driving at. It's like they have unlimited options right now. Really, like, you could build any insane experience, and you have so many companies competing for their way to lead you down the, whatever path you should go. And it's like, I think a lot of merchants and retailers are you know, and brands are actually, like, it's very difficult to discern. And I think this is true. This is why I brought up my kids. I think, as if I was a kid right now, it would be pretty difficult to choose which game I actually, and what experience I kind of wanted to use. I think retailers are kind of experiencing the same thing. Like, it's hard to discern where to invest their budget and their focus, because it's so often it's very tight, and it's very, very, like, your resources can only look so many directions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think somebody's going to lean back and say, you know, I installed the Shopify plugin for virtual reality. We're doing virtual reality. Check. What's next? And that's that's kind of the scary thing for me, is that it gets watered down, or this potential life changing, almost, you know, human race changing. I said it. A human race changing technology is going to be sort of undermined by the worst of us and the crappiest of experiences. Right.
Well, yes. You know, I think a big thing that people are doing is they're just basing on how they should react to VR with how they reacted to mobile. And so mobile was like a very, like, low-end technology where you could just have all these tools. Like, one of the most important things was analytics. It was really just about, like, getting your stuff on mobile as quickly as possible. And then it was about functionality more than anything else. I think VR is, like, the exact opposite of that. It's like, with VR, what you can do is it lets you go, you know, it's not about pressing buttons. It's like, I can time travel, I can teleport, and you've got to give me a really good place to teleport to, which is just completely different with how you design for mobile.
Yeah. I mean, like Doctor Who, you'll always be going back to, like, 1940s London, like, always.
Right.
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 I'm sorry. I've taken us way off base now.
Bring us back, Brian. It's good. Okay, I'll bring us back. All right. So here's one. So one way that I feel like might be really approachable for merchants right now, I feel like, you know, the tech is actually getting to the point where a lot of people can access this and actually use it effectively, and not just click the, oh, I have a Shopify, you know, virtual reality. Now I'm good to go. Is actually Light AR. It feels like the tech is actually getting to a point where someone could build a reasonably good experience, and and maybe do it somewhat cost effectively, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you could you, what do you think about Light AR right now and the state of Light AR?
So by, what do you mean by Light AR? You mean like,
So that would be like AR on your phone, where you know you see something like Snapchat. Snapchat's a great example of Light AR, or Pokemon Go. It's not like immersive glasses experience. Oh, right. Yeah, So what do you, I guess, AR in general? Maybe you could just give your view of how that's going to be used. You know, in commerce, there's some pretty distinct examples that I know about, like Blipr. Is starting to build out some of those experiences. So what do you have to say about AR and commerce?
Oh, okay. So my theory with AR is that AR is going to be really important. Like the ultra bullish case in AR is it's going to be like the new multi-touch. So everything, so you know, when we had mobile, all of the functionality which we're used to having with computing became an app. I think with AR, if it works out really well, that will be our interface for the world. It will be seeing things on maybe on AR glasses or maybe on your phone. So maybe the interface will be like a 3D interface. So instead of interacting with a touch screen, we're going to interact with like this virtual like holodeck type experience. So with what's happening right now, I think AR is actually a lot harder problem than VR. So I mean, AR with the glasses, you need to figure out what the user is seeing already as well as render something to them, so it's always going to be a bit going to lag VR by 1 to 2 years maybe. And the other thing with AR is it has all the same kind of software problems that VR does. So if it's tough to make content for VR, it's also tough to make content for AR. So I can see VR as being like this high-end early adopter testbed where people develop, you know, all the tool chain, they develop the graphics technology, the rendering techniques, and then, you know, once that's kind of settled, then it finds its new use in AR. So I would actually say that right now that AR is, it's just not, the technology isn't there yet. Like the, you know, the eye tracking technology, the technology to see what the user is seeing and, you know, the headsets, they just aren't as developed as VR and nor is the software. But like stuff like Pokemon Go and what Snapchat is doing, I would just consider that part of the mobile. I would classify it as more of a mobile thing. Like, you know, I think Pokemon Go was people finally figuring out how to use the location-based capabilities of mobile properly for a game. And I would say what Snapchat is also just like the tail end of like the social media imaging photography boom. I think that's kind of a different thing from AR. I think they kind of, yeah. But I mean, obviously Snapchat is kind of heading in that direction.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. There's also like Google Tango and a few other examples of this where I feel like people are going to start using, you know, some simple overlays to, you know, produce in-store experiences and, you know, other location-based, you know, interesting facts, things like that, that will help facilitate commerce. So not just commerce, but education and other fields as well.
You know,
but
what I want? I want an AR app so that when I go into a big box store that won't exist in 20 years, probably, but when I do go into one, they can hold the phone up and look around to see if they truly have that thing in the back that they always go to look for. That's what I want. Like, I want them to be able to find that, like, virtual location, you know, for the device or the thing I'm looking for that doesn't happen to be in stock. I see some assistive, I make a joke, but I see some assistive capabilities for augmented reality that are sort of beyond just the, you know, the interchange of I have a need and you have the goods, give that to me. It's more in the line of, you know, in like how we talked about with Sentient, is it sort of assistive in nature, and we'll find some good uses of that assistive in nature to sort of help us to do our jobs better and be more productive and less probably. And, you know, we were seeing a lot of novel approaches. You listed off a few of them. They're novel, but I don't know that they're, you know, I don't know that any of those actually enable commerce at this point. Right.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. No one's not necessarily, they're not it's not necessarily being used directly for commerce, although I think Blipbar is getting there, or already has actually a couple times. But yeah, definitely not adopted yet.
Yeah, I definitely get the impression that the showroom type stuff is, I think, is more fitting for AR because, you know, with AR, if you're just seeing a hologram in front of you, the bar for experience is just not as high as it is for VR. Mm. So I think AR stuff developed for it is going to look a bit more like apps than it is going to look like entertainment. Yeah. One thing I've seen is like the fashion startups doing the AR fitting. So, you know, you have a virtual mirror and it tells you, you know, this is how you're going to look in whatever item it is. So I can see that kind of thing, that kind of commerce application.
Oh yeah, we talked to Scott Edmonds about that as well. that was fun. Yeah. Speaking of you know, fashion and try on, and one of the things that we focus on quite a bit on this podcast, actually spent all of episode 8 was talking about body data and sort of rendering the human form in VR. You know, we think it's going to be, you know, or I've sort of predicted, and I don't know where Phil falls on this, actually. It's going to be a pretty key ingredient when interacting with others in VR. So, you know, fashion try-on, you know, you're going to be able to order custom furniture. You're going to be able to insert yourself into games. You're going to be able to do health-related activities and all based off of your body data. So how do you see that playing out? Like, you know, what do you think about body data and how it will be used?
So I think this is part of like a larger trend, which is to like mapping the 3D world. So you can see a lot of the stuff in AI kind of takes this direction. I think you mentioned earlier Google Tango. So that's, you know, a Google device for scanning the world around you. And there's been a ton of advances in AI to things like mapping and labeling, 3D scans of objects, matching 3D objects to things in photographs, which is what Facebook's AI research in the last year has been on. Yeah. So it might be that like we're kind of trending towards this world where we have like, you know, every 3D object in the world is kind of mapped somewhere and kind of tagged, and we can search for it. We can drag and drop it into our VR world. Or you know, whatever VR second lifestyle game that we're playing in. Again, a lot of the techniques from gaming I can see becoming more important now. So like, you know, like virtual fitting, that's kind of derived from like physics engines. So it used to be in games that you'd have a physics engine to figure out like, you know, if the monster's going to hit you or not. But then they later used it for things like cloth simulation and then like more hardcore physics and like, you know, what's happening. And so and you see that being used in like these virtual showrooms and fitting and so on. So, I think one really interesting thing about the whole VR space is how much old technology from gaming is finding a new use.
Yes, that's a good point. No doubt. I think like,
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry,
it's the lag, I think is kind of, causing a little bit of a disturbance there. Now I have to go cutting that out. my thinking is that we'll get to a place where we have better abilities to track those sorts of things. But it really is going to come down to what does it actually do for me as a consumer? Does it make it a more immersive experience for me, for instance, the Xbox Kinect from, you know, 8 years ago could just look at, you know, color fluctuations in your face to tell what your heart rate was. Like it doesn't require an insane amount of tech for us to do the things that we're talking about. I think there just has to be an application that's worthwhile. I'm not trying to answer for you, Saku, but my feeling is that it's like with anything, we have yet to sort of discover what might be a good consumer application for something like body data. And I basically just interjected all of episode 8 right into this comment. I don't know why I did that, but that's how I feel. I'm not necessarily sold on that yet. Mostly because I don't know when, you know, like I had that whole example of the Nintendo Mii, where my me was maybe a little shapelier than I'd like it to have been. And that's, you know, I think some of us want to escape what our actual reality is, and be someone different and not necessarily the exact person that we are. Do you have any thoughts on that, Saku?
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting how we're going to, how social VR is going to work. Like, is it going to be, you know, an exact replica of you interacting with exact replicas of other people? So one interesting thing I've seen is advances in light field video. So right now what you can do is you can get a rig of maybe like 30 cameras in the studio, and you can capture these like amazing holograms of people. Mm. And so light field video, for those who don't know, is like, it not only records what you look like, not one shot, but it records one shot from seen from every angle. So that means if you're viewing it again in VR, you can move your head around, look at the person from every different angle, and it will still appear accurate. So I mean, I think it might be that we are, you know, our avatars in VR are going to be a combination of body data, holograms, and light field and stuff like that. Or it might be the complete opposite, that you know, it comes out of gaming and we end up being like these you know, fictional characters. You know, I'm going to play as an orc or whatever. I mean, personally, to me, it does seem that social VR is more likely the kind of gaming than it is to come out of social networking. But you know, you can't really predict this far in advance.
That's true. There's a lot ahead, no doubt. What exactly looks like is still a little bit yet to be seen. I think one of the things that we said in episode 8 was a lot of these things will, like, when people recognize the utility, like, and actually Philip just said this, I don't even need to repeat it, but once your utility outweighs the pain of getting there, then we'll actually do it.
That was a more concise way of saying it than what I said. So
what about security though? Like, and I think it's just not just body data, but in general in VR, I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of open source movement towards, you know, VR. I think it was We Make VR. They're all about keeping it open, and other companies definitely want this to be something that we all sort of build on together, which is cool, because, you know, like, coming from you know, an e-commerce background, I think that has really helped advance e-commerce a lot, how strong the open source community is around e-commerce. And so I could see that being a really big benefit to move things forward more quickly and establish a strong community and ecosystem around, you know, around VR. And I think it's already happening. How do you feel about open source and VR together?
Yeah, actually, I think that's a super interesting question, because VR is based on a lot of computer graphics tech, which a lot of that is closed source. So if you look at the entire stack, you've got at the bottom, you've got your closed source NVIDIA drivers, then you've got your DirectX, and, you know, probably a closed source game engine but a proprietary game engine like Unity, and then probably runs on Microsoft Windows. So, like, the entire stack is closed source, like, right now. And that's because most of the people in the past who've been using computer graphics technology have been either game studios or film studios. And the structure of that industry is quite different from startups. They never really had an open source movement. But things are improving. So I've seen, just like last week, Disney open sourced a bunch of their rendering technology, which was like a great move for the industry.
Wow, nice.
So it was like, you know, all this stuff for stuff in movies, animation, which is great. And then I guess, like, as soon as more, you know, programmers who come from startups are moving into VR, they bring their open source techniques with them. But I do think that is like one of the major obstacles. So one thing we did at Oculus, not going to retell that story, but basically, like, in interacting with closed source technologies is just like pretty... especially when you're doing things for like very high performance, it's a lot harder when your technology is closed source rather than open source.
Mm. That's kind of always the case. I think open source has proven that it will continue to win. I think Yeah, I think my question to you would be how necessary, like, could open source actually forge new ground? It seems like we need the backing and the funding of and research of companies that are like the Facebooks of the world that can afford the research required to be able to make these products happen. Could this really be done purely on the back of open source?
I mean, I can totally see like companies like Facebook just funding open source just because it breeds. I mean, that's how the first open source movement happened.
Yeah, sure.
It was pretty good for the companies involved. My view of how this is going to happen is we're going to use closed source technology mostly for the first few years, and then after it's kind of proven, a bunch of startup engineers are going to rush into the space and they're going to reinvent everything. That's my hunch of how it's going to go. And interesting thing about VR is that in parallel, there's all this tech development going on in AI, and they use GPUs as well. So I feel like the tech community is going to gain all this like knowledge of how to program GPUs, and they're going to take it from, you know, once it's developed. If AI is for the open source people and people who know about GPUs, you can see those people going into computer graphics pretty easily, maybe. I don't know. I think it's a few years away, though.
A little bit of a segue here, but you spoke of AI and you know how that there's a lot of advances happening in that arena at the same time. What do you think about interacting with bots in VR? Do you think we'll actually have like? Do you think we'll create visual representations of our bots and interact with them a little bit more like they're beings or you know, because once we're in VR, you know, any we can make anything, we can render anything, right?
Yeah, no, I think the interaction of VR and AI is super interesting. So one intersection that people don't usually realize is that simulators are really important. So if I'm working robotics, how am I going to train my robot? Am I going to have to put it in a room and make my robot go through all these physical interactions? Or can I just make like a game environment and train the robot inside the game? This is a big thing for self-driving cars as well. I think one self-driving car startup, Comma.ai, they'd spend more time driving in the simulator than they had driving in real life. So this kind of the simulator tech from gaming is going to become very important. So another thing is, yeah, programming realistic AI for VR environments is something I've seen people been working on. So game AI right now is not state of the art stuff, but there are people doing things like, for example, for racing games, they will go and record the exact movements of a car at like a turning or something like that, and they will kind of train a neural net on like its motion behavior, and they'll And then they run it during the game so that the motion of the objects in 3D is like very realistic, because if you are in VR, you do pay attention to these details. As for like human behavior, I think like that's kind of one of the more difficult problems. You know, we kind of barely get a chatbot to pass the Turing test. I'm not sure we can do it with animation and everything else, I think. it might be a bit of an uncanny valley there, but we'll see.
I'm not sure I could pass the Turing test.
You've got me fooled, at least in this episode, Brian.
Oh, excellent. That's good.
I would argue a lot of what we see today is basically simulation. I feel like I'm living in a simulation the last year or so, and that's all I'll say. My gut is this hour has gone by so quickly. Thank you. We're actually kind of running out of time. I think I'd love to wrap up. We've never done this before, and I'm taking a left turn that Brian isn't waiting for or it didn't know about.
Yes.
Do you have questions for us as sort of the layman in the group? We're enthusiasts, but by no means experts in this area. Do you have any questions for us in our perception of certain things in your field?
Well, yeah, okay, that's a good question. So one thing I've been asking people is like, what have you tried any good VR experiences lately, and what made them really compelling? If you did,
So I mentioned the Shopify booth at IRC, and I think they had the Vive there, if I recall correctly. And I'm sure that they'll hit me up on Twitter if I'm wrong here. it was pretty good. Like I think, you know, theirs was pretty commerce focused, and so it was like, oh, put this furniture in your living room and then pick up a book and see what you can do with it. And then switch to space and throw that book into space. And it's like, I felt really like disjointed in terms of its experience, like what the type of experience they were creating. And I get that. Like it was really just to kind of show off their really basic ideas. That said, moving around and playing with stuff, it was really fun. Like, was presence perfectly there? No. Did I enjoy it? Yeah, I really did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. I bought a Google Cardboard not too long ago. No, I'm just kidding.
I have used Cardboard.
Yeah, I did too.
It was fun. It felt like I was using a viewfinder or whatever they're called.
Yeah, exactly. I also tried a Vive, or however it's pronounced. I also tried one of those. There were fleeting moments in sort of a demo there was sort of a demo of like an Overlook. I want to say it was, I think it might have actually been like the top of 30 Rock or something like that, looking out over Manhattan. You kind of have a moment where you're like, yeah, like I had that sort of moment of, you called it presence. I had sort of that sinking like heights court kind of a feeling, like that was strange. Wasn't expecting that. You know, at the same time, I'm the most that I've really done there is, you know, back when Lawnmower Man came out in like 1993, I went to like the Blockbuster Fun and Games, and I played the game with the pterodactyl that was made of like, you know, very simple voxels. And I did, you know, I've done that. That's like my only prior experience to anything virtual reality based. So, you know, I would almost ask back to you is that really a feeling that's sort of replicable over and over again? Or is that do you sort of just kind of get used to it? And it's just sort of an experience that you kind of get used to, or is it really that immersive that you kind of get that feeling over and over again of kind of being lost? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think, the beauty of VR is that you can, every time you have a new experience, it feels like a new thing is actually happening. Mm-hmm. So as long as, you know, your artists have the will to keep creating these new environments and, you know, new experiences, mm-hmm. and then you're not going to run out of that feeling.
That's interesting.
I've seen for me, the best VR stuff I've seen has been at film festivals. So you just see like these amazing animation studios taking their talents to VR. I think that's like where the cutting edge is. It's like that and music videos. Mm. But,
well, those are okay, both really good pointers. Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
I'm going to take this a little bit even like further down the rabbit hole. And this is not even related to commerce at all, although maybe it is. I've seen some things now. I think I saw like this, and I don't even know if this is a joke. So like, you know, bear with me for a second. I saw something recently about a company creating like a vest to sort of simulate experiences of like, say, sports players while you're watching the game. And I can't help but think, and this is just like, now we're going pretty deep future here, but like, I can't help but think that maybe that we'll, you know, in the future, we'll see some experiences sort of pop out that where it's not just presence in terms of what you're seeing, but also they'll start to introduce different other senses, yeah, engaging feedback. Other senses, yeah. And to the point where maybe there's even some sort of concoction of adrenaline of drugs.
Man, you're going or
other. I know I'm going all in. I told you I'm going down the rabbit hole here, but like, the experience of the futures will actually be emotional, physical, and and like a genuine, like you're going to hop into, say, you know, some historical figure's shoes, and they're going to take you through the emotional journey of being that person from the perspective of the storyteller, I guess.
I can totally see. So, I mean, one interesting thing about VR is it's like this revival of the arcade. So, yeah. You know, you had arcades in the 80s and everyone got consoles and you didn't need them anymore. And now you're, you know, I think we're seeing like stuff like you have like a treadmill and you're running and, you know, no, people, you know, in the game, but you need to have something happen in real life for it to truly feel like an immersive experience. So, you know, I can totally see there being like, you know, every time there's an arcade that you go to and you go through like all this crazy stuff in VR. Like one thing I've seen is like someone tries to do Flappy Bird in VR where you like, you know, you lie down your front and you like flap your arms and you play the Flappy Bird game. So there's a whole world of opportunities there.
If we could possibly end on the Flappy Bird note, that'd be an amazing place to stop.
we're gonna play the Chrome dinosaur game in VR.
I wouldn't mind that. I mean, I get a little tired. That's beside the
forever.
Point. And we have a whole list of questions we didn't even get into. I can't wait. I can't wait to hopefully one day bring you back. Don't commit to anything because I don't want to put you on the spot. But I'd love to see sort of how this shapes and pans out, especially over the next few months. You know, I think coming past the holidays, kind of getting out of the shtick of what the consumer application and getting back to really sort of the breaking. You guys are kind of out at the cutting edge and sort of hearing more about that stuff. That'll be kind of an exciting thing. So love to have you back at some point. Happy to have had you. I'm going to go ahead and close this out, Brian, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Well, one more note.
Yeah.
We'd love to, especially love to have you back after, maybe even before this, definitely, but would love to hear a report on what you're working on that you weren't allowed to talk about that you sort of left out. Would love to have you back after that. No doubt.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, thank you for joining us. Brian's always looking for the scoop. He really wants he wants someone to announce something.
I'm always looking for the scoop.
All right. Well, thank you. Right. Thank you so much. And if you're out there still listening after what an amazing hour, thank you to our guests Saku Pandit-Tharatne, and we're anywhere. Where can we point them? People, listeners to you online. So
probably just go to my Twitter, which is SKNTHLA. So Sakunthala.
Okay.
That's where I post all my stuff.
Very good.
Nice.
And
awesome.
Yeah. So reach out there, and we do want your feedback. If you have any thoughts, if you're using VR in some novel way, if you have any novel thoughts about what Brian was talking about there of future application, I'd love to hear it. And so please leave that feedback for us in the discuss comment box on our futurecommerce.fm site below. And you can also subscribe, like we said, on iTunes, Google Play, and you can listen with your Amazon Echo with Alexa Play Future Commerce Podcast. But anyway, thank you for listening. And until next time, keep looking toward the future.
See ya.
Cheers.